12 Who Shaped San Diego, a series of radio programs on local history, biographies of 12 great men and women who have left their mark on today's San Diego.
He was a natural-born salesman. They say he could charm the birds out of the trees. But he loved the common man as well as the influential people. He would stop anyone on the street and say, "Hello there, brother. How are you?" And of course, because of this, he came to be known as Brother Bill. And I think he just genuinely loved people, and he loved San Diego. And the combination together was a good one.
William Kettner came to San Diego as a young man, and with a winning personality and love of the city, he became a prominent citizen, elected to Congress 4 terms. And while he was a congressman, he played a key role in bringing to San Diego the Navy base that's been a major influence on the development of this city. The life of William Kettner is the subject of this 10th program in the series, 12 Who Shaped San Diego. I'm Peter Hamlin, and joining me is Dr. Claire Crane, San Diego historian and chief historical consultant for these programs. Claire, it seems to me that most of us here in San Diego today know the name of Kettner more for the street that was named after him, Kettner Boulevard, than for the man himself. And since he's relatively little known, at least certainly compared to some of the other figures that we've been talking about in our series of programs, I want to start by asking you why he was selected and what some of William Kettner's achievements were, what he accomplished for San Diego.
Well, because we had a biographical format for this series called 12 Who Shaped San Diego, this seemed to be the most effective way of bringing in the tremendous significance of the United States Navy in San Diego by making use of Kettner to introduce this in the biographical format. Kettner, who was our congressman from the San Diego area from 1912 to 1920, more than any other single individual, was responsible for bringing the Navy facilities here that have meant so much to our economy and to the development of the harbor throughout all these years. Kettner was active in the legislation that led to bringing the Naval Training Center here, the headquarters of the 11th Naval District, the hospital, the acquisition of the Naval Air Station on North Island, and a number of other facilities which have meant billions of dollars to San Diego's economy, and it has played a tremendous shaping role on the harbor of San Diego.
The life of William Kettner has been the subject of study by Lucy Duvall. She is presently graduate secretary at the History Department of the University of California at San Diego, and she's studying Kettner for her master's thesis at the University of San Diego.
Well, Kettner was born in 1864 in Ann Arbor, Michigan, but he was raised in St. Paul, Minnesota. At the age of 13, he left school and began to work. He never returned to school. He had to help support his family, which was father, mother, son, and 2 daughters. He worked until about the age of 18, driving a dray and selling newspapers and a lot of menial tasks, but he finally accumulated a fair amount of money, several hundred dollars, and decided to leave home. He went to, came to California, and in a mining deal in Julian, he lost all the money, so he subsisted there for a while, washing dishes and working on the Julian Sentinel as a reporter.
So he was attracted by gold, was he, as were many people of about that time and some years later?
It's possible, because his father, who was a German immigrant, had come out to the gold fields in the early years before he was married, and probably told the children about his experiences. Then he came to San Diego and worked driving a horse car up and down Broadway, and then he went to Santa Ana and eventually to Visalia, which is a small town in the Central Valley. At that time it was quite small, but he lived there about 13 years and was extremely successful there. As a matter of fact, he never planned to leave. He was in the insurance business and the real estate business and was a town councilman and extremely important in the Masonic Lodge there, and was married at the time for 11 years to a local person. However, it was an unhappy marriage, and eventually they were divorced. And Kettner then married Marion Morgan, who had been born in 1876 in Columbia, California, which is now the Gold Rush town restored as a historic monument. And they were married in 1905 and returned to live in Visalia. And it was apparent that they would stay there the rest of their lives. However, for reasons one can only conjecture, and I believe it was due to the pressures of his wife, that they leave Visalia because the
first wife.
No, the second wife. The first wife still lived there and began to enter into the real estate business in competition with him using the same name. And I believe it was difficult for Marion because the first wife was influential in the town and knew all the important people, and Marion was sort of an outsider. So, for whatever reason, they came to San Diego in 1907, and Kettner had to start all over again. But his personality was such that before very long, before many months went by, he was well known to the town, which was then about 37,000 people, which was really a metropolis compared to Visalia. He joined all kinds of organizations, principally the Masonic organization. He was very influential, rose to Knight Templar, the Blue Lodge, and a number of Masonic connections. He was so congenial and so outgoing, and apparently truly enjoyed people. Of course, he obtained lots of clients for his insurance business through all these connections, but I really get the impression that he loved people, loved San Diego.
As mentioned earlier, William Kettner was to go on to play an important role in bringing the Navy to San Diego. His interest in the military went back to the early 1900s.
His first interest in the harbor and the idea of bringing the Navy to San Diego stemmed from the visit of the Great White Fleet in 1908, when he was asked at the last minute to become program chairman. Someone reneged, and he had to put everything together in 24 hours, and he did such a super job that he received letters of congratulation for his good work and so on. From then on, he began to think about the possibility of San Diego as a naval port. He worked very hard in the city establishing himself during this time. His wife became a real estate agent, and they worked together. They never had children, so they were able to devote themselves to their profession. But in about 1912, there occurred an unusual situation in that Woodrow Wilson was running for president. There was a faction within the Republican Party which was causing it to split. The progressives and the Stand Patters. The Stand Patters were known as were the conservatives. At this particular time, San Diego was in the 11th Congressional District, which consisted of seven counties, extending as far north as Inyo and Mono County, Imperial, San Diego, Orange, Riverside, San Bernardino, which was the largest county in the United States. And he had an area, or the area was roughly equal to that of the state of Ohio. It was an important district. The present congressman was ill and had to retire. So a congressman from Riverside, a Republican, decided to run, as well as one from San Diego, who was the Stand Patter conservative. At this time, Kettner was very active in the Chamber of Commerce, and they were always pushing San Diego and thinking that it would be in the best interest of San Diego to have a congressman from San Diego, thinking that the Republican nominee, Stand Patter from San Diego, would not be able to win the nomination. Kettner sort of in jest suggested that he run and split the vote. When it became certain that Kirby would not win, the local Republicans got behind Kettner and suggested that he do that very thing in all seriousness, which he did. And with such people, local influential Republicans as Ed Fletcher behind him and John D. Spreckels, he won. 4,000 votes over the Republican nominee. So all of a sudden, there he was, the high grade school dropout in Congress, which I thought was quite remarkable.
And a Democrat as well, yes. In a San Diego not unlike San Diego of today that was really pretty strongly Republican, isn't that right?
That's right. As a matter of fact, John D. Spreckles, who was quite devoted to Kettner, made the remark that for a Democrat, Kettner came closer to being a Republican than anyone he ever knew.
The fact that Kettner was a Democrat turned out to be very helpful, because when he was a Democratic congressman in a Democratic administration under Woodrow Wilson, Kettner was able to argue that if his district were aided in one way or another, that then he probably could be reelected, and that this would be valuable to the strength of the Democratic Party in Washington. So he really was the recipient of this kind of political, you know, split.
Well, after Kettner's election, he immediately set to work with his most important project.
As a matter of fact, before he was even actually sworn in, he had already accomplished acquiring an appropriation from Congress for dredging San Diego Harbor, which was badly needed. He had to really dig to do this. He wasn't sure how to go about it. He went to the Senate Commerce Committee. The Commerce Commission denied it. Then he went to Admiral Dewey, just went right to the top. Admiral Dewey denied it. But meanwhile, Kettner would spend evenings in the Army-Navy Club in Washington, and he began to know people, and in his genial way, he became everyone's friend. And these people became interested and convinced Admiral Dewey that it was the right thing to do. So Dewey saw to it that Kettner and San Diego received the appropriation to dredge the harbor.
I'd like to say something about the importance of the dredging of the bay. We think of San Diego as having this huge and magnificent harbor, and of course it does. But the significance of dredging was that prior to the first important dredging, which took place in 1911, 12, and 13, right around there, prior to that time, the very largest deep draft Navy ships and commercial ships could not get into the harbor because, although it's very, very large, large areas are also very shallow, and so getting that appropriation to have it dredged was crucial, not only to being able to bring the Navy in here, but also to having any kind of significant commercial development.
He was almost immediately put on the Rivers and Harbors Committee, which was extremely rare for a freshman congressman, and as such, he was able to do a great deal. He was relentless, really, in his pursuit of all this. He would drag influential people to San Diego. He would waylay them in Los Angeles and see that they were given transportation to San Diego. He was determined they were going to see all these things in person. At that time, Franklin D. Roosevelt was Assistant Secretary of the Navy. Kettner got to him, became his friend, and kept convincing him of this fact. Then the Navy was stationed in San Francisco, and that was considered the very best possible place. It was a good harbor, and supplies and facilities were close by. However, Franklin D. Roosevelt was aware that the climate was bad up there, and many of the Navy recruits were ill and so on. Kettner brought Roosevelt to San Diego, luring him down through the San Diego Exposition, for which Kettner was also responsible, obtaining the legislation to have the exposition in San Diego. This was in 1915. And Roosevelt was so impressed with the climate that he agreed this would be a much better location, and he agreed to support Kettner all the way in removing the Navy to San Diego. At the end of the San Diego Exposition, it was felt that sailors should be trained on the West Coast for sea duty. So through Kettner's help, the facilities of the exposition, the buildings and the grounds, were offered to the Navy to train sailors. So that really was the first Naval Training Center, was Balboa Park. It was there for quite a while. In the meantime, they were looking for a permanent facility, and they considered three locations. One was at the south end of Silver Strand. One was at False Bay, now known as Mission Bay, and the other was Point Loma. And, of course, they secured the Point Loma facility.
Kettner accomplished what he did with a very likable and persuasive personality and also a considerable amount of community support.
He never claimed to be a politician. He always said, "I'm a businessman, not a politician, and if I made any success at all, I applied business methods in Washington." But it was a good combination of Kettner and the San Diego Chamber of Commerce. They were behind him all the way, and they would collect all the local facts which he would bombard Washington with.
Of course, the Chamber of Commerce had been interested in a military base in San Diego for a long time, according to the Chamber's present executive vice president, Lee Grissom.
Well, actually, the Chamber, as you may know, is quite an old organization in this community, starting, actually being formed in the early 1870. And our minutes of that first meeting note that one of the important things that the Chamber wanted to do was to move the military headquarters for Southern California into San Diego. So from the very beginning, the Chamber was really interested in developing a strong working relationship with the military. And, of course, the military had been involved and active in San Diego as early as 1850, when they were when they set up the barracks on Ballast Point. But besides that, we had a coaling station here about 1901. But when Congressman Kettner was in office, the Chamber became very active, particularly as it relates to the Naval Training Center. And our records show that Kettner actually wrote the San Diego Chamber of Commerce and was indicated that the naval facilities in San Francisco, located on Goat Island, were going to be given up, and the Navy was looking for additional space, particularly in the Southern California area. And he thought that if the civic leadership of San Diego could come together, that it would be possible for San Diego to really have a very substantial military installation within this community. The Chamber responded by sending a committee of one, Rufus Choate, to Washington. He was back there, and he met with the Naval Affairs Congressional Committee, and while with them, found out that they indeed were very interested in the San Diego location. And Choate indicated that he would like to bring the committee to San Diego, but would require about $1,500, most of which would be used to secure a private railroad car to bring the committee out. And that money was raised by the Chamber, and they came out. And as you might imagine, it was quite a festive occasion, with everybody hosting them at dinners and showing them different places.
In Rufus Choate's memoirs, which were published in one of the issues of the Journal of San Diego History, he gives some of the interesting details of this. He's talking about the year 1917, early in 1917. Immediately after the inauguration of President Wilson, he says, "We left Union Depot in Washington for San Diego in a private railroad car. In the group were some 14 members of the Naval Affairs Committee out of 18 on the committee. Bill Kettner, who was, of course, a member of that committee, Bill Kettner and his group were here in San Diego for at least 2 weeks. Kettner planned entertainments in their behalf, showed them the harbor and its possibilities as a naval base, took them to Imperial Valley where they spent some time. And then the committee was to leave San Diego and go on up the coast, visiting Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Seattle, where big times had been prepared for their visit since they were interested in naval affairs. But a telegram came from President Wilson requesting that the committee return to Washington, which indicated that he was going to call Congress in a special session in order to ask for a declaration of war. And so, as you can see, the fortuitous nature of this was that San Diego had entertained the majority of the Naval Affairs Committee, and Los Angeles, San Francisco were unable to do so because they had to go back to Washington.
And the final result of that trip was that the members of the Naval Affairs Committee expressed an interest in San Diego, in particular in the area where the Naval Training Center now stands.
The chamber agreed that they would raise $280,000 to acquire 135 acres, and that the city agreed that they would give up a marshland, a particularly tideland area, of about 79 acres, and that these two areas then would be used as a United States government installation. The money was raised, the appropriate ordinances and resolutions were passed by the council, and that acreage was transferred to the Navy and accepted by the Secretary of the Navy in, I believe, 1919. I think all of our records show that Kettner was certainly the person who was able to coalesce and this community's interest with in the Navy, and really provided the important political leadership. For example, it's noted in our records that whenever whenever the $280,000 was put together and the 135 acres was acquired, that it was Kettner who personally delivered the deed to the Secretary of the Navy.
Lee Grissom, Executive Vice President of the San Diego Chamber of Commerce. Our attention shifts now to a prominent site of current naval activities, the North Island Naval Air Station. North Island was at one time owned by John D. Spreckels, the subject of a previous program in this series. In the early 19-teens, Glenn Curtis began using Spreckels' property for an aviation school. The Army and Navy sent men there to be trained, and several years later, with the help of William Kettner's activities in Washington, North Island became a naval air base. That was in the early 1920s. The purchase, by the way, netted John D. Spreckels the handsome sum of more than $6 million. Well, to get a flavor of the early days of the military in San Diego at about that time, especially the early story of aviation here, we visited three retired Navy pilots who point out that San Diego has not only been known as a Navy town, it's also long been important in the development of aviation.
San Diego was the scene, North Island was the scene of very early development in flight training during World War I.
That's Rear Admiral Putt Storrs. We called on three of San Diego's first carrier pilots who all arrived here in San Diego in the 1920s, Admiral Storrs, Vice Admiral Robert Hickey, and Captain Don F. Smith.
The three of us here so happened when the first carrier pilots in San Diego. We're the first group off the Langley. And we progressed all the way within Lexington, Saratoga, and all the way up the line. As a matter of fact, all three of us have commanded big carriers ourselves, so we've been in the game all of our lives. And that goes back, actually, to the mid-20s, as you say. And all of us have a lot of time in this thing. We've all flown every type of ship. I particularly, and Bob, and Putz, both have commanded every type of squadron. I've commanded about five different types of squadron.
Well, we have the professor over here on my left. Our first Navy, he won't talk about it, so I will, because I was not a member of the team. It was the Three Seahawks, which was the first Navy acrobatic team that we had.
And what kinds of things did you do? This is sort of a Blue Angels predecessor, isn't it?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Although we were able, because the planes were smaller and slower and much more maneuverable for acrobatic business, we were able to do our show within the perimeter of the field, where now the jet is so fast that a great deal of it is done. But it was precision flying. You knew the loops and the inverted flight and the various maneuvers that the aircraft are able to do.
Uh,
Admiral Storrs says the three Seahawks made their first public appearance in San Diego at the dedication of Lindbergh Field in the late 1920s, and Admirals Storrs and Hickey and Captain Smith all flew in that formation. At that time, they remember a town very different from the San Diego of today.
We came to North Island many years ago. As you say, part of the field, about a third of the field, was Rockwell Field, the old Air Corps. Then we had the Navy in due time, finally took it over. When we first came to Coronado, Francis, I had a little house down at Tent City at the hotel. And at that time, we were riding, indoor polo was something around town, and we rode the streetcars up and down, and the ferries were running up from time to time. That's when we came here and started our existences here. And we've been in and out of this place ever since.
As we spoke, memories of the early days of flying were brought forth by a large number of photographs that were laid on a table and by carefully kept and preserved flight logs.
I think it's interesting, in looking over our logs here, we had a mock dogfight at around 17,000 feet. We didn't realize that there was such a thing as oxygen. And we flew up there without oxygen. And today, 10,000 feet, I believe, is what is required in the services to start taking oxygen.
We weren't equipped for oxygen for years. First, we started without brakes. We had about three instruments in the cockpits there, and we started from the little seaplane trainers and jennies. And we, for years, all we had was biplanes, and we finally got this monoplane out here, which was a big event.
The planes have changed, and so have the runways on which they landed, and, in fact, even the uniforms of the pilots.
When we were first there, there was no paved areas whatsoever. We just landed in the dirt.
That's why we wore boots.
And interesting enough, we all were wearing boots and puttees, but the authorities eventually came to the conclusion that that was not very smart to be flying off a carrier and not very feasible if you had to land in the water. So we all did away with flying in puttees and fancy breeches to wearing long trousers.
And another significant difference was in the harbor. At the time, hardly deep enough to accommodate the ever larger carriers that required its use.
Well, the port itself had not been dredged to take the deep draft carriers, the big ships, but they had to anchor offshore at that time. Most of the ships of the Navy that came here moored at buoys, as I recall. They had buoys in the stream. A few piers, but very few.
As Putnose and Don, and the cruises we made in 26, 27, and 28, and I wasn't here in 29, that we had to go out by boat to go aboard the carrier, rather than just walking up the gangway.
Vice Admiral Robert Hickey, speaking with Rear Admiral Putt Storrs and Captain Don F. Smith. We heard earlier, Lucy Duvall, I think, mentioned that the first dredging of the harbor was secured by Congressman Kettner in the 19-teens. And, of course, as the ships increased in size, I would imagine that new dredgings would have to be accomplished.
In addition to that, everything that has been dredged up has been put behind bulkheads, and so this has given us somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000 acres of additional land all around the harbor on which our important facilities are located.
So the dredging operations not only deepened the harbor but extended the land of San Diego, and William Mockler explains that. He was the director of community relations for the Port District from 1957 to 1968.
The Marine Corps Recruit Depot and Lindbergh Field sort of grew simultaneously because of dredging operations. For instance, Pacific Highway is the mean high tide line roughly runs down the middle of Pacific Highway, so that when people today drive down that road, that was the shoreline of San Diego at one time. And everything toward the bay is on fill from the bay.